Now let's try it once more time. Good afternoon. It's a Friday afternoon now, 12:02. I'm Eric Scott. Hello there. And as usual, our guest is U.S. Senator, State Senator Jeb Bradley, Wolfboro resident. Senator, thank you for being on with us. I appreciate it. We had mentioned that he had mentioned that we had had some Bluetooth trouble. Are you with me, Senator? No, not at the time. Okay.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we are. All right.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It sounds like what happened to my car yesterday when it decided to blow an alternator. And why do those things always happen when it's, below zero outside?
Yeah, well, you've had a rough go of it. I'm glad you're at least feeling better and back at work.
Yeah, I am. I'm feeling okay. My wife had it first. My daughter's had it twice.
Wow.
Yeah. And, well, she's in healthcare, so she's exposed a lot. Anyway, there was something I wanted to ask you right off the top when you were talking with Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos on Jack's show. You had mentioned that your bail bill had to be reintroduced. I thought it had passed.
Yeah, so it did pass the Senate. Unfortunately, it seems to have gotten hung up in the House. So the House tabled it. So I knew that it was going to be, somewhat controversial. It's hard to believe that in this day and age where we've had, crime waves around the country, where we've had, examples of people being let out on personal recognizance, no bail, in New Hampshire, that have been arrested for a violent crime and then have recommitted another violent crime within a short period of time, that there's any controversy about this bill at all. But unfortunately, there is. And so as an insurance policy, I reintroduced it in the Senate. I feel pretty confident we'll, again, pass it in the Senate, and then we'll figure out how to get it through the House. But I'm kind of shocked, actually.
Yeah, so am I. What are the objections that are being raised to it?
Well, it's, the whole progressive wing of politics today that really seems to care more about the rights of criminals than they do the rights of victims. And, that is a real swallow, quite frankly. And we're seeing that, around the country. And thankfully, we haven't had as many really disastrous examples, but there have been, some pretty bad things that have happened. There was an incident in Nashua where it was a domestic dispute. As I recall the details, a gun was drawn. So person was arrested, immediately got PR, personal recognizance, let out, went back to the residence and proceeded to, rape all night long his domestic partner. I mean, that just shouldn't happen. And, you look around the country, that young lady who was killed in the furniture store in Los Angeles, or what happened in Wisconsin, and, some of the police officers that have been shot by people that have been let out. I mean, it should not happen. And we just seem to not care about the criminal element coming across the southern border. That doesn't seem to matter to people, that are very progressive. The rights of victims doesn't seem to matter. So I'm trying to address that. I think in New Hampshire, eventually, I believe we will get it done, and we'll roll back some of the reforms that were made. And basically, it's pretty simple. If you're charged with one of, I think it's 13 different offenses that range from murder to domestic violence, child pornography, trafficking, stalking, things like that, that are really lead or actually are violent. My bill says you got to see a judge before you're given bail. It will not roll back the reforms on the amount of bail, but it will, you know, you're going to have to convince a judge if you're charged with one of those crimes, you're not a threat to either yourself or a threat to, you know, the greater public. And I think that's appropriate.
Okay. It is 12:08, and we're talking with State Senator Jeb Radley, Senate Majority Leader. I'm curious about something. I was listening to the radio yesterday because I had nothing else to do as I was sitting in my car waiting for a tow truck. And I had heard that the state is spending, what is it, $13 or $14 million to buy a hospital. I forget the name of the hospital off the top of my head, and it's supposedly to take care of psychiatric problems in children.
Yep.
Okay. Wouldn't, maybe it's the libertarian in me, but wouldn't you think that a private company would have already popped up to do that? Or is this just the state really didn't have any options at this point?
Yeah, I mean... we have had, especially during the pandemic, it's been exacerbated. But even prior to the pandemic, there were, on any given day, between 30 and sometimes as many as 50 or more kids waiting in emergency rooms to get a treatment bed at one of the facilities in New Hampshire. We have what are known as designated receiving facility beds. We have the New Hampshire Hospital. But they were all taken up. And so, you know, we've done a lot with not-for-profit vendors to try to expand out-of-hospital care. And, you know, we've tried to incentivize, and hopefully there will be one of the hospitals in New Hampshire will be able to move forward with building more beds in another region of the state. But, you know, I just find it unacceptable that we've had this many kids for this long a period of time that, you know, are being warehoused in emergency getting treatment. They can stay there, you know, sometimes for a couple of weeks before a bed becomes available. And so the Hampstead Hospital option, I think, became the best option. My understanding is we are going to run it with a private vendor, and it'll be put out through the RFP process to actually staff it, except for the, you know, administrative oversight positions. But I think it has to be done.
Do you think that it will be able to solve the problem, or do you think there'll still be waits, just not as long?
I think, you know, it's my hope that we're also able to move forward with, you know, the proposal to build a facility in Epping. And, you know, that involves some of the ARPA funding that would defray the capital costs to the hospital that wants to do this in Epping, but I unfortunately think the demand is there, and the mental health crisis, you know, even though we have dedicated a lot of resources over the last 4 or 5 years, and I mean a lot of resources, it's ongoing, and it's been exacerbated by the pandemic, no question about it. I mean, kids that, you know, have been, whether it was school shut down, whether it's even, you know, a lot of kids have had a tough time adjusting to the social distancing and masking rules. So the mental health crisis has just gotten worse through the pandemic, not better. And I'm afraid that we're going to need to deal with it. And we've had, you know, shortages of resources for several years, and this is part of the ongoing effort.
Okay. And unfortunately, these... these hospitals are more in the more populated parts of the state, which makes more sense. But what about some of us here in Carroll County, Coos County, Stratford County, that, you know, it may be a 100-mile drive?
Well, you know, there's no question that, you know, the northern, more rural parts of the state, it's very difficult. That's one of, you know, the reasons why we have developed what are called mobile crisis units. And, you know, having one that, you know, services the entire state, where you send professionals to try to intercede with, you know, the individual that, especially kids that are having issues, before hospitalization. But, you know, we're doing everything that we can to expand, you know, those beds. So, but there's no question, like a lot of other healthcare services in the North Country, it's pretty important to try to enhance what we have. I mean, I have a bill this year. I know this is a bit of an off topic, but obstetric care is very difficult to get. Huggins stopped doing live births several years ago, and there are a number of the smaller hospitals in the more rural areas of the state that don't do obstetrics. In the North Country, for instance, only Littleton. And, you know, they're under great threat of being able to continue to do this because the reimbursement rate, either for Medicaid or even the reimbursement rates in the more rural areas of the state for families that are insured, are low, and they're just not able to, you know, they don't have the volume to make it work. But if you live in, you know, the North Country, and you may have to go an hour and a half to, you know, for your checkups and your routine care, and then your birth, more and more births are being given in, you know, whether it's emergency rooms or even, you know, in some emergency cases on the side of the road. So, you know, this is, you know, like the mental health system, we've got to enhance, you know, the ability of providers to stay in business.
I had heard a lot of obstetricians and gynecologists, especially ones that deal in, you know, babies and things like that, they said that the rising cost of malpractice is a problem. Is there anything in the bill to address that?
You know what? That in general is a problem. I think less so in New Hampshire because we don't have punitive damages. But, you know, if you're an obstetrician or you're part of a hospital chain that is doing a lot of births, you can spread that cost out over, you know, more births. If you're in a more rural area, that becomes problematic too. But I think that, you know, I think we do need checks and balances and the ability to, you know, if there are major issues that come out in any healthcare system, you got to be able to seek compensation too. And I think that the fact that we don't have punitive damages and, you know, you've got to make a pretty good case for medical malpractice. And I think in New Hampshire, we haven't had, you know, the kind of tort issues that other states have had. You know, when I was in Washington, I voted routinely for reforms on medical malpractice. They would have been nationwide. As I've come back to New Hampshire in the Senate, learn more about it, I think our system is, you know, not as out of control maybe as other states are. So I just haven't seen that it's necessary to change our laws. That being said, the exposure for insurers is such that there are fewer that are writing policy. So that there's no question that's an issue.
So it seems like the whole thing is based on the ability to scale. I know Laconia is not doing births anymore.
No, Laconia is not. There are only a handful of hospitals in the rural areas of the state. Thankfully, Memorial in Conway still is. Littleton is. Androscoggin Valley in Berlin is, although I know that Littleton and Androscoggin, are, they're in a difficult situation, and whether they can continue to do what they want to, because that's their mission. But, you got to be able to pay the bills and keep the lights on.
Right. Now, that's some of what the federal money will help on this.
So I think that hospitals have gotten, Eric, a lot of money over the course of the pandemic because they've had, a huge amount of expenses in terms of, having to buy all the protective gear that they have to try to keep patients and staff safe. They've also, especially early on in the pandemic, but more recently too, are not able to do as many of the other services that a hospital would offer, routine screenings, for instance, because, their capacity has been absorbed, if you will, by record caseload numbers of COVID patients in the hospital, a lot of whom are in the ICU. So staff has to be dedicated to keeping, those patients as safe and healthy as possible. A lot of routine care, cancer treatment, things that people are postponing, and hospitals aren't getting compensated in the normal fashion that they would. And so financially, hospitals are right now under great duress. So, I think Governor Sununu has done a really good job of using, the federal monies that we have gotten that are available to go to hospitals to, help them through this financial situation. But we also have a shortage of healthcare workers. And, it's been a long time in coming, and it's going to be a long time in changing. I mean, we have expanded nursing programs to encourage people to go into the nursing career. We have upped Medicaid reimbursement rates so that people get paid more. The governor has given stipends to healthcare workers with some of the federal funds to keep them on the job. But then, the vaccine mandate, for the most part, most people were vaccinated in hospitals, but some people said, no, I'm not going to get vaccinated. And you know what, Derek? If you're a healthcare professional now, there is such a demand, especially for diem kind of work, that they're able to travel around the country and, work for a month here, a month there, whatever, at highly paid staff levels. And, that, is also, problematic too. So the hospitals they're doing a great job of doing the best they can, but it is a difficult situation.
It is. My daughter tells me that she works alongside these traveling nurses, and some of them make literally three figures an hour, plus their expenses.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It is. It's pretty amazing, and it's unfortunate, but you can't blame people for doing it.
Now,
where we're at.
Now, this the money to purchase this hospital for youth care coming from federal dollars as well?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Has there been anybody who's looked at the situation of mental illness care for adults?
Well, I mean, we've had an adult problem too, and same thing. Emergency rooms, that it's the only you know, place that people can go, and they've had to wait there too. And that's part of, you know, why we've needed more bed capacity. So it's not just kids, it's adults too.
Do you think anything's coming down the pike to address that issue?
Well, and again, this is why I'm hoping that, you know, one of the hospitals in New Hampshire has a proposal, you know, to build a new facility for mental health in Epping. You know, the fiscal committee of the legislature approved the funding to help them with their capital costs to make it happen. The executive council didn't like the fact that it was a sole source contract, and they tabled it at the most recent council meeting. Thankfully, the council did approve the Hampstead funding. I given the magnitude of the crisis, I would hope that, you know, the council would see that, you know, obviously you don't in normal circumstances want sole source contracting, but I, you know, we've got to build capacity. And I would argue that we need to do it, and we need to do it quickly, but we'll see what happens.
So a single source, which means it doesn't get put out to for a competitive bid, correct?
That's correct. And I get why people want it to go out to a competitive bid, but we're in a healthcare crisis now. The mental health situation, you know, has been with us for some time. I mean, you know, when Governor Sununu in his first year as governor in 2017, you know, came to me as chair of the Health and Human Services Committee, and, you know, so did Senator Morse, after they toured the Concord Hospital and saw patients, adults, in the hallways, in beds, you know, not getting treatment, just emergency, you know, basically being warehoused because there was no facility for them. And since then, for 5 years, we have dedicated huge amount of new resources. We've developed a 10-year plan. We have more bed capacity now, more transitional housing for people. But the problem hasn't gone away because, you know, to a certain extent through the pandemic, you know, it just continues to get worse and the numbers grow. And fortunately, we need to continue to deal with it. So, you know, that's why I hope that the executive council will, in this instance, because we're in an emergency, both pandemic and mental health and continued, you know, substance abuse, which is part of the mental health problem. And you look at, you know, the fact that more and more fentanyl is pouring across the southern border, which is basically a wide open border. Anybody can come in, and people are getting processed, but, you know, the ones that we don't catch that are bringing fentanyl in, it's record amounts. And so I think we need to do something, and, you know, just slowing the process down, you know, for an RFP, and, you know, it will add months, if not years, to a process of getting a new hospital built. So I hope that, you know, the counselors might be listening, and you know, we'll rethink.
It could take position. That long? It could take years?
Well, look, it's going to take a while to build it anyway.
Right.
Okay?
True.
So, but putting it out through an RFP process that, you know, has to have certain guidelines met, then there's a whole process where the bids get reviewed, then you have to, you know, pick the winning bidder, then you have to approve the contract. I think that's at least 6 months, if not a year, of delay as opposed to going with a provider. It's HCA, the Health Corporation of America.
Oh, yeah, one of the big ones.
Supports the hospital, and they want to build a facility in Epping. They have a good track record. They're one of the, you know, facilities in New Hampshire that has beds. You know, they're called designated receiving facility or DRF beds. So they're versed in, you know, doing this. But capital cost. And then, you know, you're sort of, by doing it this way, sole source, you're cutting through the red tape, you know, something that, like, for instance, I don't think we would have had vaccines in the timely fashion that we did had President Trump not cut through the red tape. Let's be honest about it. And this is kind of the same thing, at least in my opinion, and why we should make an exception to the fact that, you know, in virtually all situations, you would want to go through the RFP. But I think this is an emergency. You know, you've got drug crisis, mental health crisis, on top of the impact of the pandemic. So,
you know, it's funny. I get a lot of press releases from the U.S. Attorney's Office, and it seems every day there's two or three emails about they caught this person with, you know, 3 ounces of fentanyl or, you know, whatever. And you think, oh, okay, yeah, they're making arrests, but it seems that for every one that they get, you know, another 10 slip through.
Yeah, look, I know we're also, you know, catching more fentanyl at the border. Yeah, and that's good, but it's getting through in record amounts. And, you know, as long as that continues to happen, the drug crisis remains unabated. And I think, you know, as the difficulty with the pandemic has just exacerbated all of this. So,
well, you're one of the few people that actually kind of gets the fact that the substance abuse problem has a huge basis in the mental health realm.
Yeah,
as a lot of people self-medicate.
They go hand in hand. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's a reality.
Yeah, it is. And anybody who's, you know, had a bad day and had a glass of wine or something, you know, it's basically the same thing. I mean, not that it's a bad thing to have a glass of wine, but you know what I'm saying. Sometimes everyone needs something.
I do. And you know, this is why that can't take our eye off the ball. And, you know, the ball is the ongoing drug and mental health crisis. We need to respond to it. And, you know, delaying an HCA from being able to move forward, especially when we have the resources through, you know, the federal funds. And I think in New Hampshire that we have done a really good job of trying to dedicate this, you know, federal largesse. We're all going to pay for a long time to come. And the deficits matter. And they're mounting up at an alarming rate. And they're having an impact on inflation. No question about it. But, you know, I think since the money is coming our way, we've done a good job of dedicating it to, you know, real infrastructure type projects like Hampstead Hospital, like our park system, like upgrades, you know, to water, transportation upgrades, that are things that I think will have a long-term benefit to the state, but they're not going to grow the overall scope of government. And I think, you know, that's where Governor Sununu has provided excellent leadership. So,
okay. It is 12:31 here at WASR. Appreciate you listening this afternoon to State Senator Jeb Bradley, Senate Majority Leader. I don't know why I'm having such problems with that today. But anyway, one of the things that I'm curious about is paying for this care once it becomes available. Does Medicaid, I believe, pays for inpatient care? What about outpatient care?
Yeah, well, some people have insurance. I mean, a lot of people have insurance. Medicaid, obviously, you know, is a payer. So, you know, there are ways, obviously, of the care being paid for. And that, you know, mental health should be treated, you know, on par with other ailments in this country. We don't deny people services when they're having a heart attack or a stroke or something, you know, like that. Mental health, there should be parity. And I've always fought for that. And we'll continue to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, enhancing our mental health system.
I thought the parody already existed, but evidently it doesn't.
It does, but, you know, it's like anything else. You got to make sure that we're doing the right thing vis-a-vis mental health.
Ah, I understand. Okay, has there been any investigation into trying to treat some people on an outpatient basis, which I assume would be cheaper than putting them in hospitals?
Yep. So that's what's called a mobile crisis unit, and I referred to that.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so a mobile crisis unit, and there are three of them around the state, and we're standing up the fourth that will be statewide and have better resources for kids. So that is a, as it says, mobile crisis unit, mental health professionals that can be deployed on a very quick basis to try to help people through a crisis before hospitalization is required. And a lot of times, if you can get people, like a lot of other health care examples, if you can get to people early on, preventative, what have you, you're going to head off the worst of a crisis. And so these mobile crisis units work and work well. You can't just depend on them. We have to increase our bed capacity too, but anything that we can do to divert people, it's obviously good for the individual, for the family, but it's also good for the overall, stress on our hospital system. And so it's a hand in glove, approach. We need to do both.
Yeah, the only thing that bothers me is, and as you say, some of these people, if they're out in the community, they may stumble along the road, and then we have to kind of deal with it through the police system.
No question about that, and that's why, we need more capacity, and it's not, it's an emergency.
One of the things I've often wondered is, and we seem to be in agreement about it, there, how much resources are dedicated to healthcare of adult prisoners? Because I've heard it said by more than one person that jails and prisons are just giant mental hospitals.
There's no question that there are people in our prison system that have, mental health illnesses. And, hopefully, we're able to, treat them. And one of the things that we have put resources into is a new dedicated secure psychiatric facility. The one that's at the state prison now, has had problems, and we're going to build something probably on the grounds of a state hospital for those patients that are incarcerated in the prison system to get the kind of treatment that they should get.
Okay, so I hate to use the term, it's kind of outdated, but almost like an asylum?
No, I would call it a secure psychiatric facility. That's what it is, where people get treatment. Yes, they're incarcerated because they've, committed crimes, but, they also require mental health treatment.
Okay. What's coming up in the upcoming bills? I had also heard that the House had processed a couple of hundred bills in the last session. Has the Senate kept up their output of work, as it were?
Yes, I think we're doing pretty well. We met in early January. We used the House chamber, and all the bills that have been held over for study, we moved them. Some were passed to the House. Some were, found inexpedient to legislate or killed. Some were, the motion is called interim study, which means, generally speaking, it's not going anywhere, but we didn't kill it. So now we're dealing with all the bills that have been filed in the 2022 session. So we're going to be in session next Thursday, so we'll have something to talk about next week. And I think we're dealing with about one-third of the bills that have been filed in the Senate. There are about 100 bills. We're going to have some pretty good debates, I think. You know, for instance, there's a bill that will make a needed correction to the new 24-week ban on late-term abortions, you know, right up until the moment of birth. There was an ultrasound requirement that really didn't need to start at day one. And so, you know, the ultrasound requirement will be at that point of about 24 weeks. And I think that should, you know, fix that situation. But I'm sure it'll be debated. And there are a number of other bills that, you know, we'll have discussions about. And I think we're probably planning on 10th, too. So then, you know, we have our break in late February, and then we have to have all the Senate bills out to the House by the end of March. So we've had a huge number of bills this year. I'm not exactly sure why there have been so many, but there are an awful lot of spending bills that I think we need to be pretty careful about. It's an off-budget year. They may have merit, but when you put together a budget, it's a two-year budget, you know, you develop a blueprint, a plan. And even though we're running surpluses right now, I think it's important not to spend that entire surplus. And that's, you know, at least where I'm coming from.
What are some of the bills that you had alluded to, some of the important bills that will be coming up at the next session?
So my bail bill that is in the Judiciary Committee, it had a hearing, and I think they'll vote on it next week, and then we should have it on the floor in a couple of weeks.
How did the public hearing go?
I think it went well. I mean, look, the folks that are opposed to the bill, again, you know, not to be repetitive, but people that seem to care more about criminal offenders than they do victims, they'll be trying to, you know, kill that bill, my bill. But I think that we'll probably have 16, 17 votes in the Senate out of 24 to pass it. And maybe I got lucky. Maybe it'll be unanimous. I don't know, but we'll see.
So then it goes to the House.
Then it goes to the House.
Right.
This year, what I didn't do last year, there'll be something that the House wants. And I'm prepared to, you know, attach. If they're not going to act on it in a positive way, I'll attach it to, you know, House bills when they get to the Senate.
Right. Now, I have another question. Somebody asked me this the other day, and I promised I would ask you about it. You know how the federal government has to reauthorize spending bills every once in a while? Now, the state doesn't have to do that. As I understand it, they have a default budget if things don't get passed?
No, that's local.
Oh, you it's
know,
local.
Towns do that, and schools do that. So, if you're a Senate Bill 2 town, which Wolfboro is, in other words, you vote at the ballot box on spending issues, and you have to approve them, okay? If you're a Senate Bill 2 town, when a budget is being prepared, you have what's called a default budget, which is basically the same level of services that you had the prior year. And that's what the default budget is if the new budget doesn't pass. Now, what we do in New Hampshire is we have a two-year budget. As I just said, that is the spending blueprint for that 2-year period of time. Sometimes things in the second year of the legislative session get, you know, brought up in terms of new initiatives, okay, like that that hospital in Hampstead. That was federal funds. It didn't go through the legislature, but it had to be approved by the fiscal committee. Okay, so that happens sometimes. In Congress, every year there are new spending bills, and a lot of times they get hung up, you know, in the politics of Washington, and they get these big omnibus bills, and there's a showdown, and, you know, there's a threat of government shutting down, which really never happens because most of the government is on autopilot and continues even if, you know, even if the legislation's not approved. But that's the process.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about the state government shutting down?
No.
Oh, okay. 12:43 here on WASR. We're talking with State Senator Jeb Bradley, Senate Majority Leader. And again, we thank you for taking the time and being with us this afternoon. What else are you looking at your next meeting?
As I said, we've got the debate on a couple of abortion bills. I think that'll be front and center. There are efforts underway to repeal the education savings accounts, which have been deemed, you know, I think by the public to be wildly popular. You know, even though we passed them last year, and I think, you know, people really are in favor of the education choice, and I don't think it's impacting, you know, the public school system at all, because we had what are called transition grants to shelter property taxpayers. And we've also added an awful lot of new funding for schools and property tax relief in several different points. But there are people that want to take that option away from parents. So, you know, we're going to have a debate about that. We'll have a debate about, you know, the anti-discrimination language that we put in the budget, that's coming. You know, the bail bill that I said, that's coming. So we'll see. And then there's a lot of spending bills. You know, there are bills dealing with child care. There are bills dealing with economic development. There are bills dealing with body cameras for police. You know, just those three alone, I think, you know, close to $40 million. So I think we need to be careful in this, you know, off year of the budget. We're running surpluses, but unfortunately, Eric, a lot of the surplus is going to get taken up by the settlement that is hopefully going to happen and hopefully is realistic between the plaintiffs in the Sununu Youth Center case that were abused, you know, as far back as 30 and 40 years ago, and, you know, so that's going to take up much of that budget surplus. So in any case, let's hope we continue to run surpluses because our economy is doing well.
Now, how does that work, that particular lawsuit? Where does that get? I mean, obviously the lawyers handle it, but where does the state?
Yeah, the lawyers handle it, but the attorney general is in settlement discussions.
Ah.
And, you know, we'll see what happens. But we want to appropriate, you know, some money. The bill calls for $100 million, and, right. Which is a staggering sum, but there were several hundred cases of abuse at the Sununu Center. And it's been, you know, rather difficult to get our arms around how bad the situation was there. So.
Has there been an investigation into what happened or how it was allowed to happen?
Yeah, there has.
There has, okay. And hopefully people were held responsible?
Well, yes. I mean, there are criminal proceedings, and you know, but these are civil suits, obviously, against the state because, you know, these kids at the time were under the care of the state. So.
Right. Now, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. The Sununu Center and then the Spalding Center. I believe it's in Northfield.
Rochester, I think, but Rochester. I'm not aware that there's an issue there. So
okay, so it was just thankfully just the one place.
Yeah.
Okay. What else is coming down the pike as far as I know there were a lot of federal grants. Congressman Pappas was here on Monday with Chief Rondo announcing some grants to Wolfboro for policing and professional standards, which I thought was kind of nice.
So, I mean, we have gotten about $1 billion from the latest ARPA funds. And again, that gets back to what I was saying before, trying to you know, be smart about how we use these things, how we use this money in capital projects that you know, will enhance our state without growing government costs. So, as I said before, a lot of that money is dedicated to water projects, other environmental things. We're dedicating a lot of new resources to the park system. The park system's been used, you know, significantly during the pandemic. So those are, you know, some of the things. Obviously, transportation infrastructure, and there have been a lot of things like childcare. A lot of people, you know, and I think we probably do need to, you know, help our childcare agencies. But we received $78 million in that same bill that went directly to childcare. So schools have gotten a lot of money. Hospitals have gotten a lot of money. In any case,
okay. Now, this money, are there limits as to how quickly or that you can spend it? And I'm sure there are limits on what you can spend it on.
Yep. Some of the money is totally discretionary because it replaced lost revenue. That we lost because of the economy. But then most of it has to have a nexus to, you know, pandemic. So, like, for instance, I didn't mention broadband, and we've talked a lot about broadband. You know, that certainly has a nexus. The water projects certainly have a nexus. You know, state parks, there's just a nexus, too. So, there are guidelines. We have to comply with the guidelines.
And are there limits as to when you need to spend it, or is that?
I think that we have to spend it by 2026.
Oh, okay, so we've got time.
Yeah.
Okay. And in the meantime, the federal debt limit's got to be taken care of, but that's their problem.
Yeah, well, that's what happens there. But, hey, I should have told you this early on, Eric. I've got a doctor's appointment at 1 o'clock, and I'm gonna have to park my car and go into the doctor's office.
I understand. That's all right. That these things happen, and not a problem. We'll just leave it there then.
Great.
All right.
Okay.
I hope everything goes well at your appointment, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Take care. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you,
glad
Senator.
You're back. And
thank you
very much.
All right. You take care now. It is 12:51 here on WASR. Senator leaving us a little early, so we'll go back to music. News is next at 1 o'clock here on WASR.